Welcome to this podcast.
Water Polo Expert Talk. Get the insights. Yeah, so welcome to the podcast, and we have again a woman in the podcast, which is makes me at least very happy. We talked about this a little bit earlier, so it's not really too easy to get here some more woman power on board on the podcast. So welcome, Isabella, and thanks for joining us today. And maybe you can give us some briefly introduction of yourself at the beginning.
Hi, thank you so much for the invitation. So I'm Isabella Schiappini. I'm a Brazilian, half Brazilian and half Italian water polo player. And yeah, that's me.
that's basically you. Also, there are also some women or also men in the water polo community with these mixed country history, so to say. Yeah, so for Brazil, Spain.
Yeah, we have Felipe Perrone, which is Brazilian and Spanish. The best player of all time, in my opinion.
So based on his move to the other country, you say, okay, this might be also good for you.
Yeah, exactly. And there was another Brazilian woman in back in the first time that Italy won the Olympics, and I think it was Athens 2004, there was one Brazilian water polo player that had Italian citizenship, and then she went there and she won the gold medal, and then I I was like, okay, I want to be like her.
Okay, that's the way also for me. Perfect. Yeah, so at least the attendance of the Olympic Games, it's fulfilled the goal at least. So maybe you have now to work also on the medal part, yeah?
Exactly. because with the Brazilian national team, it would be hard. That's why I decided to switch nationalities.
Okay. So maybe at the beginning, so just to get a little bit more to know from you personally. So when your teammates have to describe you with a few words, so what do you think, what would you say about you?
I think they would say I'm competitive. Competitive with everything and practice. I never want to lose. And intense, passionate, and funny.
Okay. So the last one with the funny part really makes all the other things before a little bit smarter.
Yeah, exactly.
So you mentioned your roots in Brazil. How was it to come in touch with water polo? So are there any familiar boundaries regarding water polo, or how do you come in touch with water polo the first time?
Yes, my dad he used to play water polo. He was my coach for most part of my water polo career,
and my mom. Was it a good thing, or maybe not such a good thing to have your father the coach?
I mean, it has its good things, but it also was really, really hard because he was so harsh on me every time. Like he would kick me out of practice at least once a week, and. Everything was really harder on me. If he had to say something, he would be 10 times harder on me than he would be with someone else. Which at the time maybe was not as cool, not as funny, but but I would say that if I got to the level where I am now, basically 90% of it's because of having my dad as a coach.
The view is changing, or your point of view is maybe changing over the last couple of years. Yeah, so
exactly
on the history and the first beginnings of the career, and now, okay, maybe it was not so bad in the past sometimes.
Exactly, with the maturity, with the age, and getting mm-hmm. older, and then you start to realize that mm-hmm. it was some part of it was really good for me to get to the level where I am today, because he always pushed me more and more.
Yeah, so which is funny, by the way. Yeah? So when we have also here in the podcast the kind of discussion about, okay, I have my father or my mother as a coach at the very beginning, then the point of view is really changing over the time. And looking back, it was for most of the people really then also a benefit. And at the moment when you are young and your dad is maybe was your coach.
Yeah.
It was maybe also only your personal impression that he's really pushing you more than the others. Mm-hmm. And in his perspective, it was nothing like that.
Yes. But it's exactly like this. And I also had my mom. They used to play water polo. She was also in the Brazilian national team. So I had both parents that understood water polo. So basically, if I had a bad game, I didn't know if I want to go back home with my mom or my dad, because I knew that I would hear from them a lot. So I was just like, I think I'm gonna walk home.
Okay. Yeah, so when you know the one who's maybe then a little bit more patient, a little bit more politely in this case, in situations, yeah, so you can choose between the two of them.
Yeah, but it was a hard decision because...
Okay, yeah, so maybe then for the one who's not been choosing by you, yeah. So, So what about the standing of water polo in Brazil? Is this... let's say, growing country for water polo? Is it also a country with long history? So you also mentioned already Philippe Perrone, which is also one outstanding example for water polo player coming from Brazil.
Yeah.
What do you think about the standing of water polo?
Honestly, a couple years ago, I would say that it was going down. But now I think it's more like normal, stable, because there was never investment in women's water polo. Most of it would go to the men's. And mm-hmm. you could tell already by the Olympics when they hired Rudic as the coach, and then they brought Felipe Pironi, they brought a goalie, Soro, that was also an outstanding player. They brought a center that I think he's playing with the Croatian national team now. So they brought a lot of foreigner players, and to make a better team, some of them didn't even have the Brazilian passport. They just came to actually play the Olympics. And for the women's, they got as a coach, but it was a great coach where I had like my golden years with him, I would say like that. He made me play really, really well. But it was that was the investment we had to make like a fundraising one time on the internet, because we needed money to go practice with the other teams, because I think it's hard to grow if you don't practice against the teams, if you don't play against the teams that you're going to play in the championships. And we're far from, I mean, the US is the closest country that we could go. But it was hard because Europe has like all the countries are really close. You can get like a 1 hour flight, and then you are in Hungary, Spain, or whatever. And here the closest is the US, which is 12 hours flight. So that was also an issue for us. And most of the money would go to the men's, because they thought that the men's had a better chance to do well at the Olympics, and the people who actually understand water polo, they would know that for women it's easier to improve, like such a huge gap in a short period of time than the men's. But that's how they chose it. So I think after it was supposed to go up, after the Olympics, it was supposed to improve, but it actually got down because then the little investment that we had was over. And then it was just for the Olympics.
Yeah, it sounds like the situation in many other countries as well. So I think Brazil is not the only one or only country struggling with these kind of situations at the moment. So it's not really then a long-term strategy, if you will. It's only the short-term success. Yeah. So when nothing happens or it's not happened, then of the Olympics or World Championship or whatever, all the people, as you mentioned, are leaving again to home countries or whatever. And then you have the old team again, which is not really competitive at the championship.
Exactly.
Because the situation you mentioned with the fundraising to go to make any practice games or practice weekends, for example, there are also some similar situations in Europe when teams are get qualified for official championships, for example,
but
are not able to travel to the championship and their sport point of view are qualified and not able to go or travel because of the money. So it's ridiculous
It's crazy because they we practice hard and then we go to those championships to qualify, and then for example we did one here a couple years ago when I came back to the Brazilian national team. We had the world championships qualifier and we did it in Brazil to qualify for Japan. I think it was in Japan, Fukuoka. Mm-hmm. And then we qualified, we practiced, we did everything. And then they said that they didn't have money. And then I was like, why did you do it here if you're not going to take, like, you knew from the beginning that you're not going to take us. Mm-hmm. It's impossible that you guys didn't know that we didn't have money to go.
Yeah. And at the end, these are the people who are complaining then that there's no really progress in the development
or
of
results.
The teams.
Yeah,
so they would like to have the results, as you said, and then they are not really bringing the teams to the competition.
Yeah, that's what I asked. Like, how do you expect us to give you results if you don't do anything about it? It's a process. It's not one in 1 year. It's so many years to do something big and something the way you're supposed to do it.
Yeah, so there has to be some kind of vision strategy, long-term strategy, as already mentioned, not really then to have in mind, okay, I would like to have a success in 2 years, and now I have to do everything for the tournament in 2 years, but I would like also to have some kind of success then in 4, 6, or 8 years. Strange situation. It's also strange to hear that it's really the number of countries with this kind of situation is growing.
I hear from a lot of other teams that they are actually having to pay for to go to the championships, even from the juniors. They have to pay. If they want to go, they have to pay, which is, it's crazy because we're also a country that it's poor. It's a big part of Brazil. It's poor. So most of the kids, they don't have the money to pay. So we waste so many talents because maybe there's so many kids here practicing, but they don't have the same opportunity because they don't have the money to do it. And it happens a lot because there's so many. We are a big country. We have so many young athletes. But that's the problem. We don't have don't have the basic, the bare minimum.
And money is also one important point. And the other thing is what, from my point of view, is really also growing in the last couple of years is that experienced coaches or players are going to these kind of, let's say, poor countries or not really water polo related countries and do their part to develop the sport also in these areas. Yeah, so maybe this is also for Brazil the case that some of the successful and experienced coaches and players are really doing their job to make it more popular in other areas.
Yes, it's something that it's been happening here because I remember back at my time, they brought so many good athletes. I don't remember now because it was like 15 years ago, but I remember they were one of the top athletes at the moment. They brought like five different athletes, one from Canada, one from Montenegro. And that was really good because they brought a lot of together so many young athletes, which was me. And then I remember it was stuck in my mind, like, oh my God, he's so fast. He does it like I want to be like him. Even though they didn't bring any female water polo players, they just brought men's, obviously. But it's still that, like, that's what I had. So I was like, oh my gosh, I want to be like him. But they also. Yeah, they also should have done with one, but now they don't do it with anyone. So, like, I don't think the last time they brought someone, I think it was the referees for the referees, but okay. Nothing from athletes outside of Brazil.
Yeah, so which is maybe then, as you said, so much missed potential at the end because there are so many kids running around doing other stuff during these days, but maybe
on their cell phones.
So water polo can also be some other alternatives for them, maybe at least to test or to try that, who knows. Regarding the infrastructure, let's say infrastructure in Brazil, we have here in Europe, in each of the countries, first division, second division, whatever, regional leagues and tournaments. So how is it in Brazil with these kind of club structure, if you will?
It was more that we had to practice the whole year to play just a couple games. So the whole year, practice, and we would play two championships, like one in the first semester and another in the second semester, and it would be a week because it would be like just five teams maximum. I don't think there is even a second division because we're just five teams, and it's just in São Paulo and Rio, and we're such a huge country, and how come there is only two cities in Brazil that are developing water polo? There kind of is some in some other places, but it's really really. More like amateur.
I would assume that it's not really easy to motivate yourself when you do the training and the practice all over the year, and then you have two tournaments in one year.
Yeah, because then we would practice hard the whole year because we don't have a game, so just practicing hard.
Yeah,
which is a good thing. When I went to Europe, I was like, oh my god, we don't have to practice hard every single day. We have games on the weekend, so
yes. At the so end we do of not the have day, any only training and only practice.
Don't have to swim all the time.
So which is, to be honest, also a very important point, but a little bit shorter period and of time than of the, let's say, more or less only swimming part.
Because we would swim every day, literally every day, and we would swim so much because we never played, so we'd have to keep in shape somehow. So we had to swim.
So you have to be ready then for, you have to train and swim in February to be ready in November.
Yeah.
Good outlook. you already mentioned that, or we already mentioned that you have also the chance to attend the Olympic Games. I have all these attendees of Olympic Games saying, okay, the first time is really overwhelming and so much impact, and more or less I'm not really able to concentrate myself on the sport I have to do in some situations. How was it for you? Which Olympic Games do you attend? Was it in
Rio? So it was at home.
Home ground.
It was the best of experience that an athlete can have. Obviously, it was overwhelming. But also, I think the fact that we were home at the same time, it was amazing. But we were home, so we felt like home. It was not something that new, because it was an area that we knew, a pool that we used to practice. So that helped a little bit. But it was nice also having family and friends there watching you and cheering for you. And it was the hugest crowd I've ever played with. I remember the first game when I walked in after the presentation, I was in shock. I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I froze. And the funny thing, it was against Italy. And at the time, I already knew that I wanted to go to Italy after the Olympics. So it was right away, the first game was against the team I was going to play with. But once you are in the water, you just forget about everything else. Like, I didn't hear no one. Just after the goals, that was insane. Like, they cheered so loud. That Brazilian crowd is one of the warmest crowd I've seen. So even if we were losing by a nice margin of goals, like it felt like we were winning. Because when we would score, the crowd would go crazy, and I was like, "Oh my God, are we winning? What happened?" It was something really, really unforgettable.
Yeah. So, do we have any? You already told us some special memories, but are there any special memories, special emotional moments from these Olympic Games you can remember still today?
For sure, the opening ceremonies. Because we were the last team to go in, and we would enter the stadium from the back doors, but some of the people that were there to watch, they came to the back door, and they started singing the Brazilian national anthem with us. So it's something that, just talking about it, it gave me the chills. And then when we went inside, it was like, I didn't know where to look. It was something, it was the best experience, I think.
Perfect. Yeah. So when you enter then the pool, so as you said, then maybe it's, let's say, normal behavior, normal game. Yeah. So,
yes, exactly. I would say after the first whistle, then it was okay. Mm-hmm. Then I was like, okay. Water polo game, it's something normal, you're used to it, just do it.
Yeah, so the most things, or the most thrilling emotions or memories from the people I talked to about this topic was really to not as you said, not really the sports related things, but it was the connection with other sports, other people, other countries, other cultures, to attend other sports maybe during the Olympic Games. That was really then, yeah, the bigger emotional memory than for most of the people. I think that was also maybe then for you the case.
Yeah, I think also because we knew it would be hard to win some game, also because back at the time it was just 8 teams. So we knew, like, we're against the best 7 teams in the world, it would be really, really hard. I think also the last game against China that it was a better game. It was memorable because it was the last game that we were playing together. That team was going to mm-hmm. play together. We knew that this team wouldn't be, we wouldn't have this team anymore because some girls were going to quit. I was going to go to Italy. So it was a very emotional game for all of us because I remember that I scored a goal on the very last second of the game. And then I didn't realize that the game was over. And then I look at the score and then I see it was over. I just start crying and bawling. And then all the girls come together and then we hug each other. And then we all start crying together. And they had they were streaming it and then they focus on this part. So it's a video that every time I watch it, I cry because it was a really nice moment with my friends. Mm.
Yeah, so at least then the end of this, let's say, area, your time with this group of people. Yeah, so we really have a nice ending.
Yeah, exactly. It was a very nice group of people.
The decision to move to Italy was really, as you said before, really to get the best improvement of your personal development.
Because I already had the Italian passport since my grandparents, they came from Italy to mm-hmm. Brazil. My dad also played in Italy when he was younger. So since I was young, I kind of knew that, I wanted to go to study in the United States and then after switch nationalities. But during that time that I had to switch nationalities, it was when I was in the Arizona State University, and then I had to choose between finishing my school, my university, or going to Italy. And trying to win an Olympic medal since Italy at the Olympics at Rio, they won silver medal. I was like, oh my God, I have a chance to win a medal. There's not even a second thought. I'm going there. Mm-hmm. So it was everything was like set up because also the coach back at the time, Fabio, he spoke with my dad because my dad was the assistant coach of the national team, and they knew I had a passport, so everything was kind of like organized.
It's already organized, even if you do not have said, okay, I will do it.
Yes, exactly. I was like, okay, your life is going to be like this.
Okay. Yeah, so maybe at the end, it was not really so bad. That it was really well prepared.
Yes, exactly. Even though we did, after I did this, I took the decision of going to Italy and then we didn't qualify for the Olympics. So it was something else hard for me because I was like, oh, damn, I gave up my studies and then we didn't even qualify. That was something hard. But how could I know? I have to think like, oh, my God, how could I know? I would never know if I didn't try.
Yeah, so at the moment where you have the chance, the situation was another one. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
When you moved to Europe, so you played in which countries so far? So was it only Italy or was it somewhere else?
The first country I went was to Italy because since I wanted to play with the national team, I had to live there for 1 year. Mm-hmm. So I went to play in Messina. Then I also played with Padova. But I played just a couple months since I had to do a shoulder surgery after my first year in Italy. And then I didn't recover very well. It was a long surgery. So mm-hmm. when I went to Padova, I was not ready yet. So we decided with the doctor, coaches and everything that it was better if I just came back or stay in Italy and do the rehab, the physio, everything there, or I could go back home and take care of my shoulder here. And since it's already not easy being far from the family and friends, especially when you're not playing, so you're not doing your what you're supposed to. And then I decided to go back to Brazil and be around family and friends at the time. And then after, when I was ready, I went to Rome. And then after Rome, I stayed two seasons there. Then we didn't qualify for the Olympics. Then I went back to Brazil. Then Mulhouse, that is a team in France, invited me. But if, after the Olympics that we didn't qualify, I said that I was like, okay, I'm done. I don't want to go back to Europe. I want to be in Brazil, just play for fun and everything. But then this opportunity came to go to France, and I said, okay, it could be a new opportunity, something different. It's not that high level or professional as in Italy, so it could be something more chill for me and see how it goes. But we also played the Champions League. I was not sure if I could still play in that level. Also, I'm personally really hard on myself. I think all athletes are, but okay. And then I went there and it went really well. And that was like the opening door to come back to play in a professional level. That was when my coach Marco called me and said, no, I want to come back to us. And then I was like, okay. For sure, because it's a place that I felt like home, even far from home.
In Italy, so what about the, so we already talked about the different supportings of the men's and women's team. Are there also in Italy, so which is very...